Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked off before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 13 lines from the top. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side where we have our Nosei topic heading, which reads, E Bovel ke Eretz Yisrael legitin. Is Bovel considered like Eretz Yisrael with regard to Gittin? This will turn out to be a Machlokes, Rav, and Shmuel. Let's turn to the Gemara. Itmar, Bovel. Now, Tosfos explains that when we refer here to Bovel, we're referring to the conveyance of a get from one region of Bovel to another. In Hebrew, mi medina le medina, in Bovel. Does the shaliach, does the agent who's carrying the get, when he arrives at the destination, does he have to say b'fonai nechtav u'b'fonai nechtam? So Rav Omar ke'eretz Yisrael legitin. Bovel has the status of Eretz Yisrael, and just like in Eretz Yisrael, you do not have to say b'fonai nechtav u'b'fonai nechtam, so too in Bovel, no need. U'shmuel Omar ke'chutz laretz. Shmuel says it would be like bringing a get from Chutz Laretz, where the shliach has to report at his destination b'fonai nechtav u'b'fonai nechtam. Lema beho komiflgi. Can we say that the machlokis Rav and Shmuel is explained as follows? Demor sofar lefi she'ein b'kiyin l'shma. Shmuel, that is Rav, is of the opinion that the need in general of a shliach to report b'fonei nechtam is in effect report, a report that the get was done lishma, and you need such a report when you're coming from an area that they're not expert in the rules of lishma, of writing a get for the specific couple intended. The hani gemiri, hani means in these in Bovel, the Jews of Bovel are learned in, certainly in this area, that in the writing of a get, it has to be done lishma, with this, with that specific couple that's being divorced in mind. Umor sovar, Shmuel will hold lefi she'ein edim mitsuyin lekaimo. The shliach serves in lieu of witnesses that otherwise are not mitsuyin, are not readily available to verify the authenticity of the signatures. And since you're going from one region of Bovel to another, v'hani nami lo shchichi. Here too, from one region of Bovel to another, you're not going to find people at the destination that will recognize the signatures on the get, because it's not common that you have travel between one region and another. The Gemara asks, V'tisbara. This is a question on the analysis that we just offered. Explain yourself. Ha Rabba isle de Rava. Rabba, who is the shita that's associated with lishma, he holds by Rava as well that you need to have the possibility, you need to have verification of the signatures. So that if you're going to say that Rav is the opinion that says that the reason for the shliach is because they're not biki in lishma, and therefore there's in Bovel there's no need, but the author of that shita of lishma holds that even if that's not a consideration anymore, because true, you're in Bovel and they're learned, but still, if you're going from one region to another within Bovel, you're not going to have Edim Mitzuyim Lekaimo, and you'll need the Shliach anyway, regardless of the Lishma consideration, you'll need the Shliach anyway to say, B'fonai Nechtav, B'fonai Nechtav, just like Rabbah holds by Rava. So how are we to analyze this machlokus between Rav and Shmuel? Just to base Rav on the issue of Lishma would not be sufficient. Ela de kule alma bo'inon lekaimo. Everyone agrees that you need to have the possibility or the power, the ability to verify the signatures. And if you don't have witnesses readily available, so the shliach will have to say b'fanei nachnam as the verification. So what is behind Rav when he says that Bavel is like Eretz Yisrael legitin, which means no need for b'fanei nachnam? Why not? What about the verification issue? Rav Sovar kevon teiko misifta mishkach shchichi. Since in Bavel there are centers of Torah learning, and the students travel from one region of Bavel to another to get to the yeshivas, and therefore you will find people in one region that recognize the signatures of those who signed in another region. If we look in the Rashi, in the upper part of the narrow lines, Misifta, Yeshivois Kvuos, established academies of Torah learning. Achas Besurah, Achas Bin Hardo. The Surah Nardo were the names of the cities in which these academies were found. V'holchim Talmidim Mizu Lezu, U'mishar Ayoros Lahen Lumoy Torah. Students would go from one to another, come from other cities. So there was a great deal of travel between communities. And Mishkach Shrichi that we see in the Gemara means it will be common to find people that will readily, if I need to verify the signatures, I'll be able to do so. I don't need the Shaliach, I don't need the agent to announce B'fanei Nafanei Nachtam for verification purposes. Shmuel Savar, Shmuel says, no, you can't rely on the yeshiva students. Begir Saihu Taridi. They are involved with their Torah learning. They don't concentrate on the way people sign documents. And therefore, they're not going to be those upon whom you could rely. And therefore, the shliach will have to, we'll say, compensate for that and say, b'fonei nafanei nachtam, to serve as the verification. Itmar nami, Omar Rabbi Abba, Omar Rav Huna, osinu atzmenu bebovel, Ke'eretz Yisrael legitin b'chi osa Rav leBavel. Rabbi Abba, quoting Rav Huna, says we made ourselves in Bavel like Eretz Yisrael with regard to Gittin from the time that Rav arrived in Bavel. In order to appreciate this, let us take a look at the Tosfos. We have a little star, Tosfos Dibur Maschil Michi Osa, Umeforesh Rabbeinu Tam. Michi Osa Rav LeBovel. What Rav Huna was referring to when he said that we made ourselves in Bovel like Eretz Yisrael, and when Rav came, what happened when Rav came? V'hoira Lanu. And he taught us, he ruled, Shem Yemois Yechonya Shegolu Imoi LeBovel, HaChorosh VeHamasker, from the time of the exile of the last king, almost the last, second to last king of the Jewish people in the toward the end of the First Temple period, Yechonya by name, there were exiled along with that king, the Chorosh and Masgir. The Chorosh and Masgir, for our purposes, without translating those words, it's a reference to the great Torah scholars. From that point, Dino Lios Keretz Yisrael Legitin, Bovel, which was the destination of the exiles, Bovel being now the center of Torah learning. Eretz Yisrael was in the throes of destruction. The center of Torah learning transferred from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. From those days, Rav ruled that Bavel has the status of Eretz Yisrael with regard to Gittin, in the context, of course, of the shaliach carrying the get, the agent carrying the get from one place to another. So now we turn back to the Gemara. Mosiv Rav Yirmiyah. A question is raised. Notice it's a long question. Rav Yehuda Omer, and we have a quote from our Mishnah. Rav Yehuda says, "Meirekem leMizrach veRekem kiMizrach." We learned in the Mishnah the, we'll say, these geographical points that define the east, the north, the south of what is considered outside of Eretz Yisrael. Ashkelon Ladoro Vashkelon Kedoro. From Ashkelon southwards, Ashkelon is the name of a city, and Ashkelon itself has the status of outside of Israel southwards. Me'akoy Litzofin Va'akoy Katzofin. The whole Bovel, Litzfoino Deretz Yisrael Kaimo. Bovel itself is considered north of Israel. Dichti Vayomer Hashem Elai Mitzofon Tipotacha Ra'a. That's a posuk, and the posuk is referring to Bovel. And in this posuk, you see, it says from the north. Utnan, Rabbi Meir Omer Akko Keretz Yisrael Legitin. Rabbi Meir says Akko. He, in disagreeing with the previous opinion, he says Akko has the status of Eretz Yisrael with regard to Gittin. Akko being in the northern part of Israel, it's considered part of Israel with regard to matters of Gittin. V'afiru Rabbi Meir lo kamar ela ba'akko de mikrava. Even Rabbi Meir, who was willing to, let's say, expand the Eretz Yisrael boundaries, but only as far as Akko, which is very close to Eretz Yisrael proper. Avo Bovel de Merachko lo, but Bovel, which is quite a bit further away than Akko, not so. In other words, Bovel would not be considered like Eretz Yisrael. So what is Rav telling us that Bovel would have the status of Eretz Yisrael, and Rav Huna telling us that's what Rav ruled? Here we have Tanaic sources that contradict that. Hu Moisiv law v'hu Mefarak law. That is, Rabbi Yirmiya raised the question, and he also answers the question. Labar mi Bovel. When we're describing the northern boundaries of Eretz Yisrael with regard to Gittin matters, we're saying that Akko, okay, maybe that's like Eretz Yisrael, but beyond that, it's not like Eretz Yisrael, with the exception of Bovel. Labar. Bovel means with the exception of Bovel. Therefore, Bovel has its own status, and when you're carrying Gittin from one area of Bovel to another, Rav will tell you there is no need for saying Befonei Nechtam, Befonei Nechtam. Ad Heichon Hi Bovel. What are the boundaries of Bovel? Omar Rav Papa, Kemachloikis Liuchsin Kach Machloikis Ligittin. As the disagreements appear with regard to a different topic. It's called Yuchsin. Yuchsin has to do with pedigree, which is really a sukya in the fourth parak of Maseches Kiddushin. Just to make a brief comment about that, when Ezra came with the Jewish returnees to Eretz Yisrael in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, he made sure to purify or clean out Bovel from any problems of Mamzerus, of Avdus, all kinds of pedigree problems, leaving Bovel an area that was a pure pedigree, genealogical nature as far as Jewishness is concerned. So what are the boundaries of Bovel in that context? So there are different opinions. So Rav Papa tells us that just like there are different opinions with regard to Yuchsin, those same opinions will disagree with regard to the boundaries of Bovel with regard to Gittin. Rav Yosef Amar Machloikis Liuchsin. Rav Yosef says it's true that there are disagreements with regard to the matter of Yuchsin genealogy and pedigree. Aval legitin divrei hakol. But with regard to Gittin, everyone agrees ad arba tinyona de gishra. We don't necessarily have to translate that. All you have to note that it's a place in Bovel that till that point, the region has the status of Bovel. Beyond that, it would be considered like standard Medina Sayam, and the Shliach would have to say, Befonai Nechta, Befonai Nechtam. Rav Chisda matzrich me aktisfon lebe'ar this year. Rav Chisda would require a shliach bringing a get from Aktisfon, the name of a city, to Ardashir, another city. However, umei be'Ardashir la'Aktisfon lo matzrich. But in the other direction, if a get was written up in Ardashir and was being brought to Aktisfon, no need for the shliach to say b'fonei na'fonei nechtam. Leimo kosovar, should we say, can we say, or should we say that Rav Chisda holds the lefish ein bekiyim lishma, vahani gmiri, that the whole reason for the shliach saying b'fonei na'fonei nechtam is only because of lishma considerations. And in Ardashir, if the get was brought from Ardashir, means it was written up in Ardashir, they are learned. They know that gitten have to be prepared with specific intent for that couple, which we call lishma. And therefore, there's no need for the shliach carrying the get from Ardashir to Aktisfon to say b'fonei na'fonei nechtam. The Gemara asks, v'tizbara, v'ha rabo is lei derava. But even Rabba, who held the reason for the shliach saying b'fonei na'fonei nechtam is for lishma purposes, he also says that you need verification of the shliach. So even if there is no lishma problem, still wouldn't there be a need for the shliach to verify the signatures? Ela dekulei alma bo'inon lekaimo. Everyone agrees that you need to have the shliach verify the signatures. Of course, assuming that you don't have people that in that area will recognize the signatures. Well, if that's the case, then why in the situation that Rav Chisda rules upon is it one directional? And now the explanation. V'hani kevon de azli l'shuka l'hasam, the Ardashir people, where they go to Aktisfon for commercial purposes. Shuk is the marketplace. They go there and they bring merchandise there, and they're very involved with the sale and purchase of items when they go to Aktisfon. Hanoch yadi b'chasimus yodadahani. The people in Aktisfon will recognize the signatures of these, let's say, businessmen, commercial activists, when they come to Aktisfon. Vehani, but the Ardashir people who are in Aktisfon, they're not going to recognize the Aktisfon signatures. Vehani b'dahanoch lo yadi. The Ardashir people, they're the merchants that are busy conducting all kinds of business deals. When they're in Aktisfon, they are not going to recognize Aktisfon signatures. My taima. Why is that? B'shukayu 3D. We saw a parallel idea above with Shmuel's observation regarding yeshivas b'gursayu 3D. So, with regard to money matters as well, people will tend to be very absorbed in that and not pay attention and notice anything other than their actual dealings. So since the Ardashir people, when they're in Aktisfon, they're involved with their business dealings, a get that's brought from Aktisfon to Ardashir, don't expect people in Ardashir to recognize the signatures. The only chance would have been that when the Ardashir people go to Aktisfon, they would see signatures, but they're not going to notice them when they're there. Therefore, Rav Chisda says that a get brought from Aktisfon to Ardashir, the shliach will have to be the one to offer the verification. You're not going to find other people in Ardashir to recognize Aktisfon signatures. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a double underline marking. On the side, we have a mivneh, a structure note. And the double underline, one of our series markings, is a sidra shel shitos be'inyan hakoras chasimos. We'll see a series of opinions regarding necessity of the shliach saying b'fanei nefanei nechtam in this context of signature recognition. Rabo bar avua matzrich me'arso le'arso. We look at Rashi across from here, me'arso le'arso. Mishuras habatim shebitzad rishus rabim l'shuras shekinegda. Houses were built along public thoroughfares. If a get was going to be brought from one side of the highway to some location on the other side of the highway, the Rishus HaRabim, the Shliach will have to say, B'fonein afonein nechtam. Apparently, people stayed on their respective sides of the highway. There wasn't much crossing of the Rishus HaRabim to expect there to be signature recognition from those coming from the other side. Rav Sheshes Matzrich, Rav Sheshes required the Shliach to say, B'fonein afonein nechtam, Mishchuna l'shchuna. And here, as you find in many places, people who are familiar with modern Hebrew will have more difficulty learning certain parts of the Talmud than people who have less familiarity with modern Hebrew, because the word shchuna in the Gemara means something other than the way it's taken in common Hebrew. And we look at in Rashi, mishchuna l'shchuna stam shchuna shloisha botim b'maseches avodah zarah. When you see the word shchuna, it's a reference to a group of three houses. So that if a get is being brought from one group of houses to another group of houses, it would appear, even if they're on the same side of the Rishus HaRabim, nevertheless, the shliach would have to say, b'fanei nechta, b'fanei nechtam. V'rova matzrich b'oisa shchuna. Rova was the rav of a city called Mechuza. And he required, even within the same group of houses, a get brought from one house to the other within that group, the shliach has to say, b'fanei nafanei nechtam. The Gemara asks, v'ha Rava, hu di omar lefi she'ein edim mitzuyin lekaimo. Rava is the one who said that the whole reason for the Mishnah's requirement of b'fanei nafanei nechtam is to serve as verification. And wouldn't you expect that within one shchuna, you would find people to recognize the signatures, thereby alleviating the need for the shliach to be the verifier through his b'fanei nechtam announcement? Why does Rava within the same shchuna require the shliach to say that? Answer: Shaini b'nei mechuza denaydi. That we mentioned a moment before that Rava was the rav of Mechuza. Mechuza is unique. The members of Mechuza, residents of Mechuza, were always in transit. They didn't stay very long in their houses. Rashi says, "Denaydi einon mishtoyin b'votan." They don't dwell. They don't delay in their houses. Shetrudin b'schoiro. They're very, very preoccupied with merchandising, with sales. V'ein makirin chasimus shebeneim, and they don't recognize each other's signatures. And as we've said already so many times, to compensate for lack of local testimony, the shliach is the one that has to be sure that the signatures were authentic. Tosfos takes this Gemara, we'll say, very seriously. And notice at the bottom, Shaini b'nei mechuzo denaydi, reading the Tosfos, Mikan poisek rebenu tam, dehashto bizman hazeh, nowadays, tzorech lomar b'chol mokoyim, b'fonai nechta, b'fonai nechtam. In all places, the shliach bringing the get has to say this, afagav de kaimelon kerovo diomar, lefi she'ein eidem mitzuyim lekaimo, even though we hold like Rava that the purpose of the shliach statement is because witnesses are not otherwise readily available. V'lo mishum lishma, and it's not because we're concerned with the lack of lishma. Mikol makom tzorach, nevertheless, there is a pressing need for the shliach to say his thing. The hashto b'chol mekaymos naidi kivenei mechuzak. Because nowadays, and this is Tosfos speaking many hundreds of years ago, nowadays everyone is in constant movement. People aren't stationary. They don't remain where they are very long and notice how people sign things. And therefore, who's going to recognize the signatures unless, if not for the shliach telling us that these are authentic signatures? We continue in the Gemara. Rav Chonin Mishtoi. Rav Chonin tells us. Mishtoi means he speaks, he tells us. Rav Kana Aisi Gita. V'loyodano imisur l'nahardo, iminahardo l'sura. Rav Kana was a shliach for bringing a get. And I don't know in which direction he was going. Was it from Sura to Nahardo or the other way around? Also, l'kamei to Rav. And he came to Rav. Omar le, he asked, Tzarichno lemeimar b'fonai nechta b'fonai nechtam oiloi tzarichno? Do I have to say that as a shaliach or not? Omar le, so Rav says, lo tzriches. Bovel is like Eretz Yisrael. And he was going from one of these two cities to the other, Nahardo and Sura, two cities in Bovel. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. V'i avdis ahanis. And if you do say it, then it will be effective. My I avdis ahanis, what does Rav mean by that when he tells Rav Kana? Well, if you say it, it'll be effective. The answer is, de'i osi bal ma'arer lo mashgechinon bay. If the husband were to come and challenge the authenticity of the get, we will not pay any attention to him. After you, if you happen to say b'fonei nachtam, that is enough to neutralize any challenge of the husband afterwards. Kidisanya. The Rashi, second line from the top, says Kidisanya. The af mi she'enot tzorch loimar, even someone who doesn't have to say, b'fonei nechtam, im omar, if they say it, mehani, it's effective, it has power. It would be, as we've been saying, it would be the authentication of the signatures. And therefore, if the husband afterwards comes to challenge, saying it's a forgery, we won't listen to him. And here we have a Tanaic source, Maisa be'odom echad, shehevi get lifnei Rabbi Yishmael. Man was functioning as an agent, brought a get to Rabbi Yishmael, Omar lo, he asked, Sorchani lomar b'fonei nefonei nechtam, o eni tzorch, do I have to say it or not? Omar lo, b'ni mehechan ato, yes, where are you from? Omar lo, Rebbe, Omar lo. So he answered, Rebbe, mikfar sisoi ani. I'm bringing the get from Kfar Sisoi. Omar lo, tzorich ato loimar b'fonei nefonei nechtam. Shelo tizoke le'edim. You have to say that expression so as to not make the woman bring witnesses if there should be a challenge to the get. Li'achar sheyotza nichnas lefonav Rabbi Eloi. When the man left, so Rabbi Eloi entered and confronted Rabbi Shmuel. Amalo. Rabbi Eloi asks, Rabbi, Haval Kfar Sisoi Muvlas B'tchum Eretz Yisrael? Is it not so that Kfar Sisoi is contained within the Tchum, the boundary of Eretz Yisrael? We explained before in a previous shir what Tchum Eretz Yisrael meant. It's a reference to a place that's not necessarily within Eretz Yisrael proper, but it's very, very close to Eretz Yisrael, as was described in our previous Shiurim. Ukroiva l'tzipori yoyser me'ako. And Kfar Sisoi is closer to Tzipori, which is Eretz Yisrael proper, more than Ako. The Utnan, Rabbi Meir, Omer, Ako k'Eretz Yisrael legitin. And Rabbi Meir says that Akko is considered like Eretz Yisrael regarding Gittin, namely, no need for the Shliach to say b'fonei nefla, b'fonei nechtam, if someone were bringing a get from Akko to Eretz Yisrael. V'afilu rabbonon lo pligo leder Rabbi Meir lo be'akko demerachega. And even those who disagree with Rabbi Meir, namely the rabbonon, who say that, well, Akko, a get brought from there to Eretz Yisrael, the Sheikh would have to say, b'fonei nef, b'fonei nechtam, demerachega, it's far, relatively speaking. Avo kvarsi soy the mikrofolo. But kvarsi soy, which is very close, even the rabbonin would agree, no need. So why is it that you are telling this shliach that he should say b'fonei nef, b'fonei nechtam when he was coming from kvarsi soy? Amar lo, Rabbi Yishmael said, shtok bini, shtok, he said, keep quiet. Hoyel v'yotza hadover beheter yotza. Since it's gone out, it's gone forth with this heter, with this allowance, so be it. In other words, Rabbi Shmuel is saying, listen, this shaliach just heard a ruling to say, b'fonei b'fonei nechtam, let it be. The Gemara asks, what is really bothering Rabbi Eloi? From the way the story is presented, Rabbi Eloi is challenging Rabbi Shmuel and saying, why did you require the guy, the agent, to say b'fonei b'fonei nechtam when everyone would agree there's no need for it? But when you look at the story itself, Rabbi Shmuel didn't say that you have to say b'fonei b'fonei nechtam because of the Iker Hadin, the letter of the law requires it. He said, say b'fonei b'fonei nechtam, so as to prevent or ease the woman from seeking witnesses to confirm the signatures. In other words, it was a luxury that was being provided here by the shliach, saying b'fonei b'fonei nechtam, so the woman won't need to seek out witnesses. But by letter of the law, that shliach coming from Kfar Sisoi didn't have to say b'fonei b'fonei nechtam. If the get would be challenged, the woman will be able to find witnesses in Eretz Yisrael to recognize signatures from Kfar Sisoi. What was bothering then Rabbi Eloi in his challenge to Rabbi Yishmael? And now the Gemara. Ha ihu nami, Rabbi Yishmael himself said, Shalot tizkak tizokek li'edin ko'omar le. Rabbi Yishmael himself, all he said was, he said to the shal, say b'fonei b'fonei nechtam, so as to alleviate the need of the woman to seek out witnesses. The Gemara says, lo saimua kame. The story of what Rabbi Shmuel told the shliach was not told in a complete fashion to Rabbi Eloi, so he didn't hear the whole story. He only heard that Rabbi Shmuel had told the shliach, you have to say b'fonei b'fonei nechtam. He didn't hear the continuation, that the reason for it is to ease up on the woman in seeking out witnesses later on. What was the point then of bringing this whole discussion in? It was to show that even though by letter of the law, the shaliach, the agent, did not have to say b'fonei b'fonei nechtam, if the agent says it, it has strength. It constitutes confirmation of the signatures. And that is exactly what we saw in the story before involving Rav Kahana and his approach, his question to Rav, where Rav had told him, listen, you don't have to say it, but if you say it, it'll be effective. It will count as a verification of the signatures. Sholach le Rabbi Evyoser le Rav Chista. Gitin haboyin mishom lekan ein tzorach lomar b'fonai nechtav b'fonai nechtam. Rav Yosser sent a message to Rav Chista that gitin that come from Bovel, from there, meaning from there, Bovel, to here, Eretz Yisrael, There's no need for the agent to say b'fanai nechta, b'fanai nechtam. Lema kosovar l'fishein b'kiyin l'shmo v'hani gmiri. Should we say that Rav Yosser is of the opinion that the whole reason for the shliach's announcement is to inform us of lishma, and since Bavel is a place where they know the rules of writing a get lishma, there's no need for the shliach to tell us. The Gemara asks on this suggestion, Vitisbara, explain yourself, the whole Rabba Islay de Rova, Rabba who explained that the shliach's comment is to assure us that it was done lishma, he himself holds from Rava that if you're in a place where there are no witnesses that are readily available to confirm the signatures, to verify the authenticity of the signatures, the shliach has to make the announcement. And here again is being brought from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. You should probably assume that people in Eretz Yisrael aren't going to recognize the Bavel signatures. Ela de kuli alma bo'inon lekaimo. Everyone agrees with that. Even Rabba concedes that you have to be able to have people around to confirm signatures, and if you don't, the shliach is going to have to say it. He's going to have to say b'fanei nata b'fanei nechtam. So what's behind Rabbi Yosser's comment that no need for b'fanei nechtav? Since there are multitudes of people that go back and forth from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, a get that's brought from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, there will be people there that will recognize the signatures. We have a question now, and it lasts quite a few lines. Omar Rav Yosef. Man leimalon de Rebbe Yosser bar samchahu. Who is to say that Rebbe Yosser is someone upon whom you can rely? The Gemara is, up till now, is making a big to-do about Rebbe Yosser's ruling. Who says that what he says is reliable in the first place, that we have to concern ourselves with how authentic his teaching is? Now, as we go on in the Gemara will be questioning Rabbi Yosser's, we'll say, his greatness. Why will the Gemara be questioning his greatness? Because of a seeming, we'll say, lack of observance of a particular halacha. The particular halacha has to do with when one writes a verse, there is a need to do sirtut. Sirtut is drawing lines, instead of saying underlining words, sirtut technically is overlining words, where the tops of the letters reach a line. So a line is drawn, and the verse that you're writing should reach the line. That's a rule that exists when one is quoting in writing a verse. And we're going to see that Rabbi Yosser wrote in a letter a verse, and he didn't bother doing sirtut. If he doesn't fulfill that, it seems that he's not that great an individual, is the feeling of the Gemara. So why does the Gemara feel so pressed to analyze Rebbe Yosser's teaching when he's not someone we would rely on anyway? And now the Gemara. We started the question with Rebbe Yosef saying, who says Rebbe Yosser is someone that's reliable? To ha-shalach lo Rebbe Yosser le-Rav Yehuda. On some occasion, Rebbe Yosser had sent a letter to Rav Yehuda, and in it he said, "Bnei Adam ha'olim misham lekan, people who come from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, kaimu ba'atzmon, they caused the fulfillment within themselves the following." Before we go on, what are we describing? We're describing family men that came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. There were many that came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael to engage in Torah study in Eretz Yisrael. leaving their families behind without the head of the family there. And regarding that type of conduct, the pasuk says, "Vayitnu hayeled bezoino, vayaldo mochru b'yayin v'yishtu." V'kosav lebelo sirtut. The pasuk says that regarding fathers that leave their families behind, it's giving his child over to harlotry and his daughters being sold for wine. It's an expression of what we would call maybe an abandoned family. And this is what Rav Avyosser, who lived in Eretz Yisrael, was sending to Rav Yehuda in Bavel. You know, your people who leave Bavel and come to here, this is what happens. And Rav Avyosser wrote this verse, V'kosav lebelo sirtut, he wrote it without the sirtut lining requirement, V'yomer Rav Yitzchok, Shtayim Kosvin, Sholosh Ein Kosvin, V'masnisa tona Sholosh Kosvin, Arba Ein Kosvin. You have a technical disagreement between Rav Chisda and the second opinion, how many words can be written without sirtut, and beyond that, you have to have sirtut. According to Rav Yitzchok, two words from a pasuk can be quoted without sirtut, but once you quote three words from a pasuk, you have to do the sirtut. And the Brisa says three words can be written without sirtut, but once you write four words from a pasuk, you have to have sirtut. And Rabbi Avyosser wrote more than that, without any sirtut. From this we are supposed to conclude that Rav Avyosser is not someone reliable. Omar le Abaye. And notice we have a long answer marking. The reason we have this long answer part of this long answer is a bracketed section. The first, till we get to the brackets, that will be the main part of the answer. Omar le Abaye. Abaye says back to Rav Yosef, Atu kolde lo yoda hodi Rav Yitzchok lav gava rabahu. Are you saying that anyone who doesn't know Rav Yitzchok's teaching, the halachas of sirtut, thereby demotes him from being classified as a great man? Granted, someone who doesn't know something that one could conclude through logic and reasoning, and doesn't have the capacity of exercising logic to reach those conclusions. So granted, I would concede someone like that, that doesn't reach conclusions that can be reached through logic, he's not a great man. However, the issue of sirtut and verses, this is not something that's based on logic, it's based on a tradition. Ha gemara hi. It's a tradition what requires sirtut, how many words requires sirtut. Gemara lo shmile. He did not received the tradition. He wasn't familiar with that tradition. In other words, Rav Avyosser was a very great man. He was able to apply logic and analysis to every topic that required thus. However, the issue of sirtut and writing verses is not something that one would arrive at through svara, through logic. Viod, and furthermore, I want you to know, says Abaye, that Rav Yosser was a great man. Ha Rav Yosser hu da askim more al yodei. It was that which Rav Yosser said that met the Almighty's approval. Met with the Almighty's approval. Askim is to agree. More. It's a reference to the Master, the Almighty, agreed with that which Rav Yosser said. So at this point, you can see we've now reached a bracketed section. Abaye has made the point. Rav Yosser was a great man. That he didn't know Rav Yitzchok's teaching regarding sirtut is not something it's not something that we would expect someone to arrive at on their own through logic. And topics that require logic, Rebbe Wessel was quite capable in handling that. Furthermore, Rebbe Wessel was someone who received the stamp of approval of his teachings from the Almighty. And that's what we're now going to see in the bracketed section. So we're going to, what would appear, get very much off the topic, but we're getting into a section in which Rav Yosser makes a comment, and we'll see how the Almighty likes what he says. On the side of the more, we have a subtopic heading, Pilegesh Begivah. Pilegesh Begivah is a reference to a tragic episode in the time of Sefer Shoftim, where there was a woman who was a Pilegesh. She's a concubine. Rashi refers to the man with whom she was as her husband. So we'll say it's a form of husband-wife relationship. This isn't the occasion for getting involved with the details of that. But Pilegesh, we'll see in the Gemara, abandoned her husband, and we'll see why. The Gemara will tell us more about the story, but she ended up being the subject of immorality. She was raped, and that brought on a civil war within Israel. Now, just with that background, we'll continue on our note on the side, point number two, Emo Yisera Besok Beso Shalom. And more, we'll discuss the objectionability of heads of households that create a spirit of extreme, let's say, fear in their houses. They're overbearing, they're dictatorial, and as a result of their bearing, the members of the house, their wives, can become overcome with fear, and that can have negative consequences. The Gemara. Where do we see that that Askim Morei Al Yadei, that the Almighty approves of that which Rebbe Yosser teaches? Dichtiv, Vatizne Olov Pilakshel. The Pilegesh, that woman, concubine, the wife of the man in Sefer Shoftim, she was she engaged in forbidden relations. Rebbe Yosser Omar, Zvuv Motzalah. And here the Gemara is very, very terse, so we have to just fill in between the lines. We have to fill in that she ran away from her husband, and thereby losing, say, the protection of being within her husband's household, under her husband's supervision. Why did she run away? Well, because her husband got very angry at her. And why did her husband express rage? Because he found a fly, Rashi says, bekaora, in a bowl of food that she was serving him. Sounds a little bit like the Paro story in Sefer Bereishis with the Sar HaMashkim. Anyway, Rebbe Yosser's explanation of what enraged the husband is the is finding a fly in the bowl of food that she was serving him. Rebbe Yunus and Omar, Nima is a hare. Nima Motza La. Here again, the Gemara is very brief. Rashi says, Nima ba'oisei mokoim. This has to do with matters of intimacy. The woman had this pilegesh. Apparently, she didn't remove hairs from the pubic area. And in intimacy, that could cause the man injury. And when the husband was having intimacy with her, that's what he discovered, that she had a nima hair over there, and she didn't tend to it like was the practice, and he got very angry. Ve'ashkechei Rebbe Yosser l'Elio, Omer le Maiko Ovid HaKodesh Baruch Hu, and if Yosser met Elio HaNovi, that itself is a sign of something very special. that he met Elio and he asked him, what is the Almighty doing? The Almighty is involved with that incident. These kind of Gemaras you can readily see and appreciate that they're involved on they're presenting something of a very deep nature and presenting it in a very, let's say, very hintful form, very indirect. Also another point, just to make this a little more let's say understandable, if that can be said, is that the Almighty exists above time, so that we have the concept of the past and the present and the future. With regard to the Almighty, those concepts don't exist. So that Rabbi Yosser asking Elio, what is the Almighty involved with? And the Almighty says, well, he's involved with the Pilegesh Begiva incident. So as far as the Almighty is concerned, it might very well be, from our standpoint, something that's very current. Umay Ka'omar, and I'm just assuming everyone is quite aware that Rabbi Yosser was many, many hundreds of years after the Pilegesh Begiva incident took place. Pilegesh Begiva, as we mentioned, was the time of the Shoftim, which was shortly after, was after the death of Yehoshua, when the Jews entered Eretz Yisrael, and Rabbi Yosser is in the Amoraic period, after the destruction of both Bot HaMikdash. So Eliel tells Rabbi Yosser that he's involved with the story of the Pilegesh Begiva. Oh, my Omar, and what does he say? Omar Lay, so Eliyahu tells Rabbi Yosser, you know what the Almighty is saying? Rav Yosser Bini, Kahu Omer. Yoinuson Bini, Kahu Omer. The Almighty is quoting what each one is saying with regard to what caused the husband to get angry at the Pilegesh, at the concubine wife. So if Rav Yosser says to Elio, this can't be. Is there some kind of doubt that the Almighty is not sure? He's saying, well, this is one opinion, this is the other opinion, and the Almighty doesn't have a stance on it. Elio says, perish the thought. Elu v'elu divrei elikim chayim hein. Both are godly thoughts, and he explains. Zvuv motza velo hikpid. The husband discovered he did find a fly, but that didn't upset him too much. He didn't express wrath with the discovery of the zvuv. Nima motza v'hikpid. But when he discovered that she had left the Nima there, that blew his top. Omar Rav Yehuda, Zvuv Bekora V'Nima Be'Oisa Mokoim. And Rav Yehuda explains that which we've already explained regarding these two points, the bowl, the fly and the Nima, the fly being in the bowl and the Nima being in that place of intimacy. Zvuv Me'Isusa. The zvuv is disgusting. Okay, people can be upset about things that are disgusting, but they don't totally lose themselves over that. The nimo sakanta, the hair, that actually represents something of danger. The person, a man, can end up becoming sterile as a result of being, let's say, entangled in that nimo. Iko di amri, idi v'idi bikora. Another explanation is that both the zvuv and the nima were in the bowl. Zvuv oinsa v'nima psiusa. The presence of a fly, that's something that happens even beyond a person's control. You can imagine, as the wife was holding a bowl of hot soup with two hands, putting it down in front of her husband, the fly just at that moment flew into the bowl. She couldn't even shoo it away. The nima, that's negligence, pshusa, negligence. She should have cared for herself before engaging in intimacy, and that is what upset the husband. As we go on in the Gemara, we have some markings. You notice a bow tie shape and double underlining on the side under the Mivneh. We've noted Shnei Memros being in Emo Yisera Besoch Beisoy Shel Odom. Two teachings regarding this topic of too much of increased wrath within a person's house on the part of the Balabais. Omar Rav Chisda, Li'olam Aliatil Odom Emo Yisera Besoch Beiso. A person should always be in control of himself and not impose too much wrath in his house. This is a very interesting phrase, Emo Yisera. Elsewhere you see, if I'm not mistaken, in Maseches Shabbos, you see the Gemara is saying that a little bit of wrath, a little bit of fear has value. Maybe we'll call it imposing of authority. But Emo Yisera, too much fear, that can have negative consequences. And here we have an illustration of that. Sharei Pilegesh Begiva, Hitil El Bailo Emo Yisera, the man and wife of Pilegesh Begiva, the husband imposed upon her too much fear, and the result was a major civil war broke out. V'hipilo kama revovos Misrael, and tens of thousands of people lost their lives. This story being the catalyst for that which transpired later on. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav kol hamatil emu yaser besoch besoy. Anyone who imposes in his house too much fear, sof hu ba lidei shalosh averos, he's going to find himself in violation of three major sins: gilui arayos, shvichus domim, v'chilul Shabbos. Gilui arayos, the sin of forbidden intimacy. We take a look at Rashi. Gilui arayos, kishimagia zman tfilos sebeis sina. A woman who's married must observe the laws of family purity. We call hilchus nida. And part of those laws necessitate an immersion in a mikveh at the conclusion of the period of defilement that the nida, that the menstrual cycle presents. And there could very well be in the cold season, that's called Eis Tzina, the time of cold, comes about. Vehu vehi yorea, and she could be fearful. Lomar lo tavalti. It's the weather conditions are such, or the whatever the circumstances are such, that it's so frigid that she cannot immerse herself. But she's going to be so fearful of her husband's reaction if she were to say to him, you know, I didn't immerse myself. The immersion, of course, makes her permissible to her husband, And what's going to be? Umishamashta nida. She'll continue. She'll have relations while she has not left her nida status. She hasn't immersed herself, and she'll have the relations anyway. That's a problem of arayas, a woman who is not tahora, even though it's a married couple. But that is a major sin. In fact, if you want to appreciate it, it's like would be tantamount to a brother having intimacy with his sister. It's the same level offense. They're both punishable by kores. For some reason, people might scream in horror of the thought of a brother having intimacy with his sister. They should have the same reaction when considering a husband having intimacy with his wife if she hasn't purified herself. But you can see that out of fear, this could very well happen. The next example in the Gemara of major sins that could happen is shvichus domim, spilling of blood, meaning death. Well, we have the example of the Pilegesh Begiva. Rashi suggests other possibilities. A woman might be so fear struck of her husband, she'll run away, and she'll literally run away and then fall into some pit or fall off a bridge in fear of her husband. And the Chilul Shabbos, Rashi explains, a woman might be running, we'll say, be running late in her Shabbos preparations. And she didn't have a time to light Shabbos candles. And if her husband will see that she didn't light the Shabbos candles, he will have a fit. He will go into a rage, an uncontrollable rage. What effect would that have on a wife? If she's fearful of that happening, she'll light the Shabbos candles even after Shabbos set in. Or maybe she didn't cook his favorite dish that he's anticipating having on Shabbos. And if he sees that she didn't prepare that food, he'll blow a fit. And that will lead her, her anticipating his reaction, she'll end up cooking on Shabbos. And he won't know. And there you have an example of Emo Yisera leading to Chilul Shabbos. Omar Rabo Bar Barchana, Ho Di Amri Rabbonon, that which the Rabbonon teach, and this may be familiar to many of you who recite specific passage on the Friday night prayer service. Shloisha dvorim tzorch odom loimar besoich besoich erev Shabbos im chashecha. Three things a person must refer to, mention in his house as Shabbos sets in. He asks, Isartem, Eravtem, did you separate the tithes from the fruits that we're going to eat on Shabbos? Did you prepare the Eruv? Eruv is a Eruv Chatzeros, Rashi says. It's the means of joining together several houses that open to a common courtyard, thereby enabling carriage of items from the courtyard into the houses and vice versa. That's the Eruv. Did you prepare the Eruv? That has to do with setting aside some food on behalf of all of the residents of that courtyard. And if you've done that, then Hadliku Asaner, then now light the candles. Those things, Tzorech Lemimrinu, we're continuing at the top of Dav Zayin Omed Aleph. Those things must be said benichusa. Nichusa would mean in a pleasant tone of speech, in calmness. Kihechi delikbalu minei, so that they will accept him. After all, what's he saying? He's saying, you know, you should take care of the hafroshes maisris, the tithings. Take care of the erev chatzeres. Do so in a calm way, so that they'll accept his instructions. Omar Ravashi, ano lo shamia li ha de Rabba Bar Barchana. I didn't hear Rabba Bar Barchana's teaching, who said that you've got to say these things in calmness. The kiyamte misvaran, on my own, I figure, well, that's the way to say things. If you and all of this, of course, goes back that if you speak in harsh, enraged terms, people will end up doing the things even after Shabbos set in, which it's of course too late to do these things. You know, one doesn't tithe on Shabbos, one doesn't set up an Erev Chatzeres on Shabbos, and certainly with regard to the lighting of Shabbos candles, one has to make sure to do that Erev Shabbos by being wrathful and rageful about these things. The sins that we described before can very well take place in the future. And here we have a long point, again in the same topic. Amar Rabbi Avolu Olam Al Yatil Odom Emu Yusiru Besoch Beso. A person should always avoid over wrathfulness in his house. Sharei Odom Godol Hitil Emu Yusiru Besoch Beso. There was a story involving a great man who violated this, and he did impose, created great fear in his household, and we skipped the bracketed section for a moment. And as a result of that, bikshu la'achilu dover gadol, umayinu eiver minachai. And it almost happened that he ate a limb ripped off of a living animal. That's called eiver minachai. Eiver is a limb ripped off a living animal. Obviously, a sinful thing to do. Animals, if you want to eat from them, they have to be slaughtered properly beforehand. We skipped a bracketed section. Let's go over the Gemara again, and we have to find out what's really the story over here. We said a person should always avoid Ema Yesera. There was a story. A great man did impose on some occasion great fear. Vehechiluhu dover gadol. Vehechiluhu means they fed him and he ate a big thing. Big thing meaning a serious offense, which we already discovered. Umanu Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Who is the great man who imposed inordinate fear in his household? It was Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Here the Gemara asks, Vehechiluhu sakadeh? Could that possibly be? It's true he lost himself, apparently, but that doesn't diminish the fact that he was a very pious, outstanding, great individual. And we have the following tradition. Hashta, behemton shel tzadikim, ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu mevi takola al yodam. Mind you, the animals owned by the righteous do not ever stumble over some sinful act. In other words, the Almighty doesn't bring them to stumbling. Even their animals. Tzadikim atzmon lo kol shekein. The righteous themselves, would the Almighty cause them to stumble? Would he allow them to stumble over, sinful eating of food? Ela bikshu l'hachilo dover gadol. It almost happened that he ate the dover gadol, my new one. What is that? Eiver minachai. Now, what's the story? I'm sure everyone's wondering what happened over there. So Rashi on the top tells us, Eiver min achai, shenevad mehem eiver min hashchuta. Shchuta is an animal that needs to be slaughtered. So they, apparently in Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel's household, an animal was slaughtered, and maybe just to dramatize the story a little bit, he liked the leg of a chicken. Some maybe refer to it as the polka. And the chicken was being served, and they noticed that that there was a pulka was missing, and uknei a moso, and because of his rage, hey, where is the pulka? Chotchu avodov eiver minachai. They didn't have enough time to shecht the animal, to shecht another chicken, and do what has to be done. And what did they do? They ripped off a leg from a living chicken. Vehiviu tachtov shelo yavin. And to replace the missing pulka, they brought this one so that he shouldn't be aware. So apparently they knew there was some kind of experience where he had lost it. He had blown his stack because some part of the animal wasn't served. And here this happened. This situation arose, and they knew that he would get really angry, and they ripped off the leg of a living chicken, and he almost ended up eating it in the last minute, so it didn't happen. Based on what we saw, the Kodesh Baruch Hu won't bring a takola upon a tzaddik. Tosfos elsewhere points out in the context of eating food. I mentioned Tosfos elsewhere, but in fact, you see Tosfos over here says that point. This concern of a takola is in the context of matters of eating. Right? The Tosfos says, the gnaihu letzadik she'ochel dover iser. It would be a very big, very, very degrading to a tzaddik to eat something that's forbidden. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.